Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host, and I will be escorting you about a bit of the battle space of the war for the free world with several of our most illustrious colleagues and much admired public servants, past and present, starting with a former member of Congress, our colleague Fred Grandy. Currently a senior fellow with the Center for Security Policy, will be doing our Week in Review recap with Fred for segment one. We'll be speaking with Representative John Shimkus about energy security, a practical step that could be taken to actually give us a measure of energy security at long last. And segment three, we'll be speaking with Reza Khalili, a defector, a former CIA agent in place in the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. He'll be telling us what we should make of what's going on inside Iran right now and what it might mean for all of us. And then finally, Bill Gertz will give us, in segment four, our tour of what's going on inside the ring. Much to cover, much of great importance, starting with the news, Fred Grandy, that Israel has test-fired a new relatively long-range missile, one apparently capable of delivering, we're told, a nuclear weapon to, say, Iran. This seems to have the Iranians' panties squarely in a bunch. Lots of threats being made, lots of thrashing around going on. What do you make of it? What do you think it might lead to?
Well, without speculating as to what Iranian panties really look like, whether they're bunched or not.
Yes, let's not go there, please. What was I thinking?
My first reaction is hooray for our side. I'm glad somebody is realizing that Iran probably is the premier threat in the world. And for Israel, at least through what I can tell, pretty high-placed people like Benjamin Netanyahu and the defense minister, Ehud Barak, saying that we actually favor some kind of an attack to keep them from moving their nuclear program online. I'm glad, even if it's just bellicose rhetoric. But it seems to be the only kind of language that up to this point the Iranians have understood. I mean, contrast that with what our president has been saying in terms of an outstretched hand and, modest sanctions, usually which don't even bite. At this point, I say, again, hooray for our side.
Yeah. I guess the question that occurs is against the backdrop of some of the reporting out of Israel that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is now actively seeking the support of his cabinet for a preemptive attack on Iran. Does this new capability in the Israeli arsenal bespeak a much, much more, imminent effort by the Israelis to take this matter on?
Well, I don't know. I think obviously what they're trying to do is rattle a pretty powerful sword here, and it remains to be seen whether or not Iran will take the bait or not. I mean, we have a pretty good indication that Iran has acquired a nuclear weapon. Just how much or how little they will use it remains to be seen, but you know, Netanyahu himself has said repeatedly Iran is not going to curb its nuclear ambitions unless it is threatened with military action. So right now we're looking at a threat. I guess I wonder about the tactics of this, Frank, because unlike Iraq, of course, which Israel did go after in 1986 when they took out Saddam Hussein's reactor, these are tougher facilities. Some of these are underground. They're harder to hit. They're harder damage, and I'm just wondering if the real capability is there or whether this is just rhetoric.
Yeah, I think it was actually 1981, but you're right, they did take the Iraqi nuclear program down, and they did it without a lot of talking about it beforehand, as best I can recall. But the main thing is that they, as we'll talk about with Reza Khalili, you're dealing with a regime in Iran that seemingly is quite committed to triggering Armageddon. So whether these actions by the Israelis will precipitate a preemptive strike by the Iranians, assuming they do have a nuclear weapon, or whether the Israelis will get to go first, is, I guess, what we will be all watching very closely, needless to say, Fred Grandy, I hope staying tuned to Secure Freedom Radio as we try to stay abreast of these developments. They're so portentous, both for the region, for our friends there, and needless to say, for us as well, not least because the Iranians are apparently saying, among the tight panty mode that they're in, that they will attack us if Israel does, in fact, go after them. Fred, let me turn to, if I could, quickly, because we're going to run out of time here very, very rapidly, I'm afraid. Your thoughts on this business in Europe at the moment, another place where there seems to be a lot of tight panties. We're witnessing the Greeks saying they want a referendum. The government may fall over the question. A tremendous amount of pressure being brought to bear on them from the supranationalists in the European Union. What does this mean both for the people most immediately involved in Europe and perhaps for the rest of us?
Well, I guess I keep wondering whether or not the whole concept of the European Union and the euro was as great in practice as it seemed to be in promise. I mean, would we really be having this problem if Greece still was responsible for its own drachma and was not tied inextricably to more prosperous economies? I thought the whole idea was the stronger economies would lift up the weaker ones, but quite obviously, the opposite is happening. A lot of it is due to the entitlement mentality in Europe. But to me, the real question, Frank, is how much or how little China will come in, supposedly proposing some kind of a bailout, and what kind of conditions China will ask for a huge investment like this. Are we actually looking at a situation where China will bail out Greece? I mean, will bail out Germany and France so they can bail out Greece and Portugal? How does this end?
Yeah, a terrific question. Fred Grandy, of course, in your days on Capitol Hill, you served on the House Ways and Means Committee, so you have some familiarity with these financial machinations. But I think the question that you've raised clearly has strategic overtones as well.
Oh, sure.
We're hearing talk, or at least some speculation, about whether the Chinese might demand, as a quid pro quo for their financial help in the bailout of whomever, that they will insist Europe stop caviling about their predatory trade practices, or perhaps even resume the sale of advanced weapon systems to China, something that was suspended after the Tiananmen Square massacre. They've been anxious to get that embargo, in effect, undone for years, and we've been encouraging the Europeans to maintain it, not least out of a consideration, Fred, that those weapons may be turned against us.
Well, sure, and imagine what our position would be if the Europeans actually acquiesced to this and said, all right, you know, if you want to hold as much debt of ours as you do of the United States, which is roughly over $1 trillion, will abide by these conditions. Where does that leave us from a national security and a fiscal security point of view?
Yeah, I hope it's not up the creek without a paddle, as they say. Fred, very quickly, we've got about a minute left. What do you make of the fact that 28 of your former colleagues, I believe, have now formally called for the resignation of Eric Holder as Attorney General of the United States?
Well, I guess I would say, and quite honestly, if I were still a member of the House of Representatives, I'd be signing on too, based on what he has done. This is probably all driven by the Fast and Furious controversy, the Mexican gun scandal. But you know, you also have to look at these new rules about combating terrorism, or I should say, standing down from terrorism, saying let's not use any kind of ideological or religious imprimatur to find terrorists. which is usually a great place for them to hide. What will happen here? Nothing. I mean, I assume this is entirely partisan, and what normally happens in an effort like this is even people on the other side of the aisle who don't like Holder will rally to his support. So will he resign? I very much doubt it, and quite honestly, if he did, I think we'd probably get somebody worse.
Right? We could well under this administration, that's for sure. They've populated the Justice Department with people who are as bad, if not considerably worse. Fred Grandy, thank you so much for your insights, as always. Thanks for your partnership in this program. It's great to talk with you. I look forward to doing so again next week. Next up, we'll be talking with one of our distinguished colleagues, former colleagues, Representative John Shimkus, about energy security. Straight ahead.
You think? Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.
My name is Sunday Hollis, and I totally lost the craving for sweets. I totally lost the craving for bread, even meat. And some people, you know, you would see people say, oh, well, you're eating a salad because you're trying to diet, but you just don't have a taste for any of the junk anymore. And it is so, so, so true. Now, I'm thinking this is something that the celebrities are using. They're just not giving the meta system the credit for it. I've tried everything under the sun, and this is the only product that I have even called the company and asked them, could I sell it for them? This is a product where you can actually use the word awesome. I mean, and it is the whole essence of the word awesome.
Don't wait another minute to start losing weight. Call Judy Singer's The Meta System at 1-800-711-JUDY. That's 1-800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
It could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are joined by Congressman John Shimkus, a man I admire tremendously, both for his previous service in the uniform of the United States Army. He achieved the rank of lieutenant colonel in 20 years of service in active and reserve elements of the Army. He is a West Point graduate as well, and he has gone on to other things in the public sector. He is now in his eighth term serving in the United States Congress, representing now the people of the 19th District of Illinois. Over that period of time, he has risen to a senior position on the Energy and Commerce Committee, now chairs its subcommittee on the environment and the economy. And Congressman Shimkus, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. It is terrific to have you, especially since you're doing some work that I consider to be truly the Lord's work at the moment.
Well, thanks. I'm great to be with you, and appreciate the work you do.
Well, thanks. Listen, specifically, I want to just call our audience's attention to your leadership on H.R. 1687, the Open Fuel Standard Act of 2011. And maybe if you would give us a little background on what brought you to sponsor this piece of legislation and why you think it's time has come for enactment.
Well, in my early days here in Washington, being from an agricultural region, I followed the renewable fuel debate. And in the 2005 energy bill, we really transitioned from this clean air, oxygen debate to a energy security, alternative sources of fuel, and trying to diversify the liquid fuel transportation market. That has now...
Can I just interrupt you for a second just to dwell on that point? Because I'm not sure that most people would actually know what we're talking about. We do discuss it from time to time here, but yeah. When people think of liquid fuels, of course, for our transportation sector at least, they think naturally of petroleum products. What are the alternatives?
Well, we do have, ethanol-based fuel now, and E85 vehicles run a lot in the Midwest. I've been using three different year models for now 8 years, and I have retail locations that pump 85% ethanol fuel versus 85% crude oil-based fuel.
Yeah.
Now, because I'm an all-of-the-above guy, this is how I've moved today to the open fuel strategy debate, is that I could care less what the commodity product is. Let's set a standard by which anyone who has any commodity product could develop a transportation fuel that will work in our vehicles. That's just the basic premise. And whether that's – I just got off the floor speaking on the oil sands, whether that's liquid transportation fuel produced from crude oil from the oil sands, whether it's developed from corn, either fermentation or cellulosic, or whether it's coal to liquid, whether it's crude oil, I really could care less.
Yeah,
I could really care less, but you cannot have that competition at the pump and diversify our liquid transportation portfolio unless you just set a basic standard for the acceptable transportation fuel, and that's what we try to do.
And specifically, what is that standard, and how does it apply to get us to fuel choice, as it's called?
Well, the legislation is fairly simple. We know that flex fuel vehicles are produced now by the major automobile industries, and all they have to do is say 50% of what you produce are going to be flex fuel vehicles, and then years down the line. Yeah, by a date certain, then you go to 80% by date. This is exactly what Brazil did, and that's why they were actually following the Brazilian lead on becoming transportation fuel independent by having the standard.
Yeah, and I guess the other piece of this is having pumps at the other end that will enable you to exercise that fuel choice. Is this something that you're working on as well?
Well, now we don't really think that that's as... They're kind of mixing some apples and oranges. There is a debate on blender pumps, and that's really driven by the ethanol people. The open fuel standard is it's really commodity product agnostic, except for telling the automobile industry have these vehicles that will take any commodity product liquid transportation fuel. We think that it's about $100 additional per vehicle, and it's really gaskets and hoses. We also think that then the engineers get to work to make sure that you can get the highest mileage per commodity product, and there'll be electronics added, but they need to have a signal that we do not want to be continue relying on imported crude oil with a basically a crude oil liquid transportation fuel strategy that we have right now.
Right. We're talking again with Congressman John Shimkus of Illinois. He is the chairman of the Subcommittee on Environment and Economy of the Energy and Commerce Committee. He's also one of the lead sponsors on H.R. 1687, the Open Fuel Standard Act of 2011. Congressman, I know you have bona fides as a conservative Republican. Others in your caucus respond to all of this by decrying mandates from the government. How do you respond to that?
Well, it is. I can't hide from it. It is a mandate. It's a mandate on the industry to have a an engine design that will take all liquid transmission fuels. But our argument is we are now mandated to take only gasoline in our passenger vehicles.
Right.
So we're already under a mandate, and that increases our reliance on imported crude oil. It doesn't make us more energy and self-reliant, and our national security issues would be better served with a mandate on vehicles and a diversified fuel portfolio versus this mandate to receive only, in essence, gasoline. Yeah. Defined by crude oil.
Yeah. Congressman Shimkus, I'm always reminded when this, boogeyman is thrown up that, of course, we've had mandates for seat belts and airbags. We've also had mandates to make every television set in America digital and supposed to analog. And it seems to me having energy security is at least as important as having a high quality television signal. So I hope our friends can get their heads around the necessity of doing this from a national security point of view as well as economic security. And I appreciate your leadership on it so much. May I just take advantage of your expertise with the military and national security broadly defined to ask you, you've also been recognized just recently by a group we're familiar with, the Citizens for Against Government Waste, as one of the taxpayer heroes, based on your voting record last year. I'd like to just get your take on the advisability, as things stand now, of having national security be made kind of a bill payer for the deficit reductions and trying to avoid increases in taxes and so on, at a time when, as you say, we really are facing, especially given our present dependence on foreign oil, such serious challenges around the world. How do you prioritize these competing demands?
Well, you hope that the super committee does its work, and so you don't fall into sequestration, and that's where you have no policy say in how this gets cut up. Now, I learned some stuff yesterday in a meeting on it's really defined in the discretionary health and human services block, and then there's a national security block. Most of that is military, but FEMA falls in there, Homeland Security, because FEMA's under Homeland Security. And with all these disasters, it's really making things very tricky if we go on the sequestration route and what it does to national security. I think the military leaders and even Panetta, the Secretary of Defense, have already issued warning signals. So this hopefully is a clarion call to the super committee to do their job.
Yeah. I suspect, given the expanse of your service in the military, you remember when we hollowed out the military before.
Well, I definitely remember I joined I was at West Point during the Carter administration.
Yeah.
Really, it got sworn in 80, it served under Reagan, and I experienced the rebuilding, which was monumental and made all the difference in bringing down the Cold War and the wall and all that stuff, and front row seat just because of what Ronald Reagan did.
Yeah, well, we're still living off of it, as you know, and thank God you were there for the rebuilding as opposed to having to try to do your job with the hollowing out. I pray we are not going to do that to our military again. Congressman Shimkus, thank you very much for your leadership on the open fuel standard, most especially, and for your work on behalf of our national security in your present incarnation and your previous one. Thank you. I hope you'll come back to us again very soon.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Next up, former CIA agent inside the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps tells us what's going on back in Iran and what it might mean for you. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hi, NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Then that's a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof, just move it your way.
For an hour a day. Because moving every day puts you on the offense towards a stronger you.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Bugs.
So be a player.
Be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
You said it at www.letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
In 1966 in Anchorage, Alaska, a talented child was born. He would go on to be one out of only 11 Alaskans to make it to the major leagues. The odds of him striking out more than 3,000 hitters? 1 in 33 million. The odds of this pitcher being selected to the Major League Baseball All-Star Game 6 times? 1 in 48 million. The odds of this fastballing philanthropist winning the World Series 3 times? 1 in 3 million. The odds of this man having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Hi, I'm Kurt Schilling. Learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Autism is getting closer to home. From 1 in 5,000 only 20 years ago, today 1 in 110 children are diagnosed. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
What are you doing?
Filling out a loan application.
I can help you get approved, you know.
Really? How?
With this.
A bag of sand?
It's not a bag. It's a pouch. And it's not sand. It's credit fairy dust.
Credit fairy dust?
Yes. I sprinkle some fairy dust on the application, and your credit rating magically improves.
There's no such thing as the credit fairy.
An unbeliever now. But what will you think when your loan is approved?
I'll think my credit score improved because I paid my bills on time, kept my credit card balances low, and only opened a new card if I really needed it.
It's the dust.
It's sand.
Don't deny the credit fairy.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Effney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Effney, your host. I'm delighted to be welcoming back a guest we have visited with in the past, and it could hardly be more topical a moment to discuss what is going on with him than this. He is Reza Khalili. His book is A Time to Betray, The Astonishing Double Life of a CIA Agent Inside the Revolutionary Guard of Iran. Reza, since you came in from the cold, I guess as they call it, you have been issuing a succession of warnings about what is going on in Iran and what it might mean for us, and the imperative, really, of taking this very, very seriously. And I wanted to sort of visit with you about several different aspects of that sort of generic topic, with maybe for starters, your sense of what's going on inside the regime itself. There's clearly a struggle underway between the supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, and the president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Where is this leading, Iran, and what might it mean for us?
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's great to be back on your program again. You know, the split between Khamenei and Ahmadinejad started right after when I revealed Iranian secret documentary, The Coming is Upon Us, where Ahmadinejad was portrayed in the same level as Khamenei and the Hezbollah leader as the key figures for the last days when the Islamic Messiah reappears. But the separation...
This is a film that was made for the internal consumption of the regime, as I understand it. They didn't expect that you or anybody else outside would get their hands on it. Is that right?
Yes. Actually, the besieged and the guards and the president's office had worked on it, and the supreme leader had approved of it prior. But then when it was revealed, when I revealed it over here and the media covered it, the clerics in Iran became furious because now the secret was out and their ideology open for everybody to see. And so the split started then. They attacked Ahmadinejad, closest ally, Mashai, and then he became defensive, and then his differences and problems with the Minister of Intelligence. But the problems have been accumulating since then. Khamenei has tried to tolerate him with his misbehavior, as they say. He's been talking against Khamenei. He's been making points to irritate Khamenei. And recently I learned that he has removed many documents from the intelligence ministry, which are against some of the leaders of Iran, just as ammunition if this thing heats up further. But in reality, his position has been diminished.
This is Ahmadinejad we're talking about, the president.
Ahmadinejad. Yeah. And he's not a key figure anymore. Mm. Khamenei calls the shots. The guards are totally behind Khamenei. And they're just going to try to tolerate him for as long as possible because Khamenei was the one who selected him. And many Iranians were murdered, tortured, and raped over the fraudulent elections of 2009.
Yeah. We're speaking with Reza Khalili. He is a former CIA agent who had burrowed into and has now exposed many of the deepest secrets of the Iranian regime from inside the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. Reza, just a word on this, Twelver ideology, I guess it's called, and what it means if, in fact, as you say, Iran has now obtained nuclear weapons, both from the Soviet Union and through its own development of these weapons internally.
But you see, we've had our heads in the sand for over two decades. They've been working on their clandestine nuclear bomb project, and we've given them time, and we've tried to appease and negotiate, not understanding the very ideology behind their actions. They truly believe in the end of times. They believe that all the signs are pointing to that being close, and that they have a mandate by Allah. Their mission is to create that specific environment, which then the last Islamic Messiah, the 12th Imam, Shiites, 12th Imam, Imam Mahdi, will reappear, kill the rest of the infidels, and establish the rule of Allah throughout the world. Now, as I revealed, Ayatollah Khomeini, the founder of the Islamic Revolution, then the supreme leader, had told close associates that he had three goals for Iran. One was to throw out the monarchy, two was to establish an Islamic state, and last, to pass the flag of Islam to Imam Mahdi, the last Shiite imam. Yeah, and they asked him, are you going to be the one to pass the flag? He said, no, the one after me. So they truly believe that Khamenei is the deputy of Imam Mahdi on earth.
Mm. And nuclear weapons are conducive to creating the conditions under which this 12th imam might return, the lamentations, the outpouring of grief, the appeals for his help. Let's turn turn quickly, if we can, Reza, there's so much to talk about. Your assessment of what Iran is doing to foster conditions throughout the Middle East and perhaps more broadly internationally that are conducive to this kind of end times catastrophe. Talk to me, if you would, about, as you can, in the space of a couple of minutes here, the vacuum of power that we're creating with our departure from Iraq, what they're trying to do to shore up their client in Syria, their takeover of Lebanon, the role that they've been playing in Libya and Egypt, Bahrain, maybe Saudi Arabia, the attempted attack. How does all this fit together as you see it?
Well, you see, they've been calling this the so-called Arab Spring, as an Islamic awakening, and they have their strategy was to diminish the leadership of Saudi Arabia for the Islamic nations, which they think they have achieved. They had strategized on weakening U.S., which they have successfully done. We are withdrawing from Iraq. We are trying to withdraw early from Afghanistan, and Iran obviously will be the key power to take over of the affairs in the region. Their ties with Syria is immensely important to them, and they've made it clear that Syria is a red line. Should Syria get attacked, they will get involved. Hamas, Hezbollah, Islamic Jihad, and their proxies would get involved. And so they see all of these events, specifically the weakening of America and the current conditions in the Middle East, as a verification of the signs that the end is near. And for that to happen, the trigger is to destroy Israel, create havoc, chaos, lawlessness throughout the world, where over one-third of the world population will die due to wars and another third to due to hunger and chaos. And that can only be brought upon by using nuclear weapons, attacking Israel, European capitals, and an EMP attack on U.S., where tens of millions will lose their lives.
Yeah. This is, needless to say, a frightening prospect, Reza Khalili. That is your pseudonym, the nom de guerre, I guess, that you've been using to help raise an alarm in this country and elsewhere in the world about what you've seen firsthand from inside the Revolutionary Guard of Iran. Just very quickly, can you speak to the, and we have really just about a minute, the role that Iran is playing in support of and in assisting al-Qaeda?
Everybody knows that Ahmad Vahidi, the current Iranian defense minister, is wanted by Interpol for his involvement in the Jewish Community Center bombing in Argentina. He was the key figure from early on as the chief intelligence officer of the guards to establish ties with the Muslim Brotherhood, Islamic Jihad, and others. He was a close friend with al-Zawahiri from early on, and then he put together the coalition of al-Qaeda, Hezbollah, and others. So they are a key supporter of al-Qaeda. They've been training, they've been arming alongside with Taliban, and this continues to today, and it should be a major concern because Iran is the center of proliferation of arms to all these proxies and terrorist groups.
Yeah. Reza Khalili, we have to leave it at that. Thank you for your very, very important message. I appreciate enormously your book, A Time to Betray, The Astonishing Double Life of a CIA Agent Inside the Revolutionary Guard of Iran, and your writings at Pajama Media and elsewhere. Please come back to us very soon. This is a story that requires our urgent attention. Bless you, sir. We'll talk with you. Next up, Bill Gertz joins us to talk about what's going on in the national security arena. He takes us inside the ring.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Medisystem, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Medisystem to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Medisystem by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Medisystem from Judy Singer, the powerful all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
In Washington, Hugh Hewitt has the diagnosis.
They don't understand the need for speed.
Oh, we'll get to it. Don't worry. We'll get it done. Open amendment process, blah, 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 blah.
Not in the least bit clued in to the sense of urgency, but I don't think the Beltway is.
I'm just beginning to think it is a Beltway disease.
Kind of an invisible wall separates them from what the people think.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone. At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org. Even if it's just everyday stuff, like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say
sweater?
That?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined as we are each week, I'm happy to say, by Bill Gertz, the National Security Editor of the Washington Times. He is also the author of a weekly column entitled Inside the Ring, and we look forward to these visits with Bill as he takes us on a tour of what's going on inside the Pentagon and the national security community writ large. Bill, let's just start with a piece that your colleague Rowan Scarborough filed earlier this week. Reporting on the very, very direct warnings now being issued by the Joint Chiefs of Staff about the sorts of implications of budget cuts that are either in the works or in prospect, at the very least. Give us just a quick sense of the gravity of these warnings at the moment.
Sure. The military chiefs told Congress this week that there will be dire consequences if Congress goes ahead with the automatic nearly $1 trillion cuts in defense spending. This is a call that has been echoed in weeks by the top military leaders as well as the civilians, warning of dire consequences. The issue is that the pie has shrunk considerably, and all the services want a piece of it in order to sustain and maintain America's capabilities to be a force for good in the world. That's really the issue.
Yeah, and I was just struck by some of the directness, I guess is the way I would put it. Ray Ordiano, among others, just really putting it on the line that they're talking about catastrophic effects for the military with he, among others, saying we will have to stop every single modernization program in our service, or just about. And needless to say, Bill Gertz, as you know so well, that means, as you say, a lack of preparedness to deal with future threats and perhaps even some of those that are at hand. Bill, in your Inside the Ring column this week, you talked also about a particular area of concern that is making that kind of unpreparedness all the more problematic, namely cooperation between communist China and Iran with respect to missile developments. We're hearing a lot about missiles these days in that part of the world. And let's start with what you've picked up.
Yeah, I got a hold of a draft report by the U.S.-China Economic Security Review Commission. The report is due out in the middle of this month, and it says that the Chinese have been selling Iran mainly cruise missiles, but other missiles as well, in possible violation or in likely violation of both U.S. sanctions law as well as U.N. sanctions that were imposed on Iran for its non-cooperation related to its nuclear programs. I can remember being in Beijing back in 1997 with then-Defense Secretary William Cohen, where he was praising the Chinese for their cooperation, saying that they had agreed to halt sales of C-802, which is a very high-speed anti-ship cruise missile. And guess what? This report said that that was basically a lie, that the Chinese have continued to sell the C-802 along with other cruise missiles. And, in fact, last year built an entire missile factory in Iran. And yet no one in the U.N. or in the U.S. government is holding the Chinese feet to the fire on this.
That's all the more alarming, Bill Gertz, because as you know so well, we're looking at a lot of ships these days, U.S. naval vessels, in the very confined waters of the Persian Gulf, and their ability to contend with an anti-ship missile of the character of the C-802 is problematic, to say the least. Bill, let me just segue to another piece of this drama with the Iranians. We've heard, including above the fold in the paper yesterday on your Washington Times, about an Israeli missile test of the Jericho, I guess an advanced version of the Jericho that would be capable of reaching Iran with nuclear weapons. The Iranians have made very belligerent noises about their willingness to inflict immense damage on the Israelis if they ever even think about using such weapons against them. What's your reading on how this is developing in the Middle East at the moment, particularly as a result of the Chinese sort of sending sparks into this tinderbox?
Yeah, well, the Chinese are totally irresponsible, and this is part of a anti-U.S. policy to supply arms to Iran. And U.S. officials are growing increasingly concerned about indications, warnings that the Israelis may be ready to do some type of operation against Iran. I mean, the Israelis understand that the clock is ticking on Iran's nuclear program. The Iranians already have the missiles that can deliver nuclear weapons and very likely got the warhead design through the AQ Khan network that was supplied to Libya, Iran, and North Korea, which included designs for a small warhead, nuclear warhead. So this is there's some growing indications there. And, of course, the best defense for the Israelis is to maintain a robust deterrence. And, you know, their missile forces, they have a nuclear force. It's covert, but they have one, and they need to upgrade their delivery systems. And I think that's what's what we're seeing play out in that test this week.
Yeah, Bill, you've made a very flat statement on that. I guess the official Israeli position remains one of ambiguity, but there's really no question in your mind or in the mind of the kind of folks you work with inside the ring that that Israel has a nuclear force in place and is capable of using it.
That's why I say, yeah, it's covert. It's undeclared, in other words.
Right.
You know, they're, you know, usually you have to kind of test the nuclear weapon to be entered into the club of nuclear powers, but it is believed that the Israelis may have conducted a some type of a nuclear test with the South Africans many years ago. And, of course, everyone's looking for Iran's test of a nuclear weapon, and there are serious concerns that the Iranians will or may already have shared test data when North Korea conducted its two tests in the last several years.
Yeah, and I guess, Bill Gertz, as you know, there's continuing reports that the North Koreans may be preparing to do yet another test in the not-too-distant future. Bill, you mentioned deterrence as one of the most important means of trying to dissuade a country like Iran from using its nuclear capabilities, actual or incipient. Another is, of course, missile defense. And we heard and you reported inside the ring, your column this week, that Representative Michael Turner, a most impressive member of the House of Representatives and chairman of the Armed Services Committee's Strategic Forces Subcommittee, made a very, very strong statement about what's happening with respect to American missile defenses as a result of the Obama administration's predations in this area. Tell us what Representative Turner was talking about and where we stand in terms of our own capabilities to deal with an Iranian missile threat.
Yeah, there was a hearing of the Strategic Forces Subcommittee of the House Armed Services headed by Turner, and he disclosed in his opening statement that there were indications that the administration is planning to seek an amendment to the NATO-Russia Council Charter. That's the governing document for this NATO function that is sought to bring the Russians into a kind of a side grouping of NATO. And they want to amend the charter to say that the U.S. will not aim its missile defenses at Russian missiles. And this is a limitation that the Obama administration has said in the past they would not agree to. Now, fortunately, the Russians are probably not going to accept that because they're demanding even more. They want more formal legal guarantees that our missile defenses won't be pointed at Russian missiles. And so far, the administration's holding its ground, as well as NATO, too, stating that its missile defenses are for defenses. They're not for cooperating with a potential adversary.
Yeah. Well, let us pray that we will stave off more harm to our missile defense capabilities. If we do, Bill Gertz, I know it will be in part thanks to the Kliegleit that you put on this subject at a time when most of the rest of us are not paying nearly enough attention to it. Jim, we thank you for the work you're doing at the Washington Times, Bill Gertz, and for joining us each week as you do here at Secure Freedom Radio. I hope you will be with us again next week. And the same goes for the rest of you. Same time, same station. Talk to you next week.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.